was read out to the one that I thought was going to be read out. So I did wonder whether or not we'd have to have a quick change and a sermon on the Beatitudes. And maybe in a few minutes' time you'll think maybe we should have had a sermon on the Beatitudes. The choice is yours, but actually there is a strange and uncanny link between the Beatitudes, the part of the Sermon on the Mount, which you had in your partnership news, and the reading which is set for today, which is about the parable of the ten virgins, a story that we're all very familiar with. And the passage opens where Jesus says, at that time the kingdom will be like the ten virgins. And if you sort of glance back on the previous chapter, what Jesus has been talking to his disciples and the crowds about are about what's going to happen at the end times, and what are the signs of the end times. And so the context of today's passage seems to be the end times. This is what it's going to be like at the end. And it's going to be like these ten virgins, five wise, five foolish. But as we've seen, as we've looked at Matthew's gospel all through this the last few months, Matthew's gospel is deeply rooted in Jewish tradition, and you know, the dialogue between Jesus and the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the authorities. And this passage also seems to continue that theme. Yes, it is about we should look for the coming of the Messiah, and the message is clear. We are to be prepared. Be prepared like the five wise virgins, not unprepared like the foolish virgins. But there is a Jewish tradition which compares wisdom and folly. And if you look at the book of Proverbs, that theme is clear in through the book of Proverbs, about this comparison about the wise and the foolish. And Proverbs talks about two women, a wise woman and a foolish woman, woman of wisdom, woman of folly. And these women call to the men as they go by, offering their various lifestyles, one a lifestyle of wisdom and one a lifestyle of folly. And Matthew's drawing on that tradition as he talks about the five foolish virgins and the five wise virgins. The woman is now replaced by five women, foolish and wise. And that's the tradition that Matthew draws on as he talks about this passage, as this passage is in the Bible, looking back to that tradition. So we begin to get a hint that if it's looking back, then perhaps it's not just about the future. It's not just about the end times. We also get hints in that it talks about a bridegroom. And Jesus, earlier in the Gospel, has referred to himself as being a bridegroom. Do you remember when John's disciples go to Jesus and say, how come your disciples are not fasting? And Jesus says, while the bridegroom is here, the disciples shouldn't fast. There'll come a time when he's taken away, when the bridegroom is taken away from them, and then they will fast. So Jesus has already referred to himself as a bridegroom, and we have here a bridegroom in this passage. The previous parable has talked about a king preparing a wedding feast for his son. And again, we see the analogy that Jesus has of being that son for whom the wedding feast is being prepared. All of which get the Jewish believers to understand and see the pointer that Jesus is making to himself as being the Messiah. And so within that context, we can see that Jesus is not just laying down this is what it's going to be like in the future, but is actually challenging the Jews to this is what it should be like today. So he's not just saying, here's what the church will be like, here's what the kingdom will be like in the future, and laying down, if you like, the principles for the church. He's actually challenging the Jews to think about how they see their belief and their religion and see it in the context of what the Messiah will do. and who the Messiah is, because they look for the Messiah to come, and Jesus says, I'm already here. And that's the link with the Beatitudes, because yes, the Beatitudes are talking about how people should live in the future. The principles of the church, the principles of the Christian belief, if you like. But it's also a reminder to the Jews and a challenge to the Jews that this is part of their Torah, this is part of their law. The blessings and the curses that we get in the book of Deuteronomy and the book of Leviticus talk about the blessings and the curses, and it's the same, the parallel that Jesus draws. It's not just about the future, but it's about the here and now. And what Jesus wants the Jews to do is to look back so that they can see the things that God has done for them and reflect on them in their everyday life. And that's part of what we are called to do as Christians today, is to look back, just as Jesus invited the Jews to do, to look back at what God has done for us in our lives so that we are prepared for the future. And there is a very real sense that looking back to the past is the preparation for the future that Jesus is calling the Jews and ourselves to do. To look back in order that we can look forward. And today, perhaps more than any other day, we look back with gratitude for the things that the people who have gone to serve their country have done, for the lives that they have given up, for the people that came back injured and maimed and scarred mentally and physically for life, whether that's in the First World War, the Second World War, or the many conflicts that there have been since then, currently in Iraq and Afghanistan. We look back with gratitude so that we can be prepared for the future. One of the great Christian writers, Henry Nouwen, puts that into a Christian context. And he says, if our gratitude for the past is only partial, then our hope for the future cannot be full. And as we look back on our Christian lives, if our gratitude for what God has not done for what God has done for us is only partial, then our hope in that future that we have will not be full. And if our hope in the future is not full, then perhaps we need to look back on our past with gratitude for what God has done for us. And it's also a stimulus to say, and it's also about the here and now. We have a responsibility to reflect on what God is doing for us day by day so that we are prepared for the future. We look back with gratitude on those who gave their lives for their country. And it's right that we should do so. But when we look at the suffering that we have since then, it's a timely reminder too that our hope is not in the works of man, it's not in the deeds and the decisions of government or military bodies, but our hope in the future is in God alone. In the Old Testament reading, Micah, who's one of the earliest prophets, he's in the southern kingdom, and he's working, preaching about the same time as Amos and Hosea in the northern kingdom, about the 8th century BC. But Micah is speaking to both the capitals of the northern kingdom of Israel, Samaria, and the southern kingdom of Judah, and the capital Jerusalem. And he talks about the sins that are infecting both of those cities, and the fact that both will fall. And we see the takeover of the Assyrians, the invasion of the Assyrians, and the exile into Babylon. And then in the passage we have today, which is the beginning of the second half of Micah, Micah talks about a new hope, that despite everything that will happen to the Jews in the centuries to follow, some of which could have never been foreseen, there is a hope. There is a hope of a new Jerusalem, the Jerusalem that the Jews and you and I will inhabit. We look back with gratitude on the things that God has done for us. And we look back with gratitude on the things that the people who have given their lives for their country have done for us. But as we look to the future, reflecting on the things of the past, reflecting on what God has done for us, our hope and our assurance is in God alone. Amen.
Amen.
Our hymn 784, Thy Hand.